Excuse me, your recording has started. You may now proceed.
Okay, it's Jonathan Robinson. I'll head up the call then. Welcome to the Cross-Community Working Group CWC Stewardship meeting number 79, believe it or not. It's been a while since we've got together, so there is an opportunity to do a little bit of catching up and make sure everyone is up to speed with the latest developments and where we are. So in order to do that, I'll make a couple of opening remarks. First of all, welcome to those of you who are able to join us, and I see a couple of familiar faces. People have been with us for quite some time, and also a couple of new people on the call. So welcome all of you, and let's see what we can do. You'll see the agenda there in front of you. It was circulated previously. There are really a couple of key points we need to deal with. I've been aware that we have the implementation oversight task force meeting and hearing from the implementation staff on a reasonably regular basis. The group is this group is receiving email updates, but it's important that the group is in sync with anything that's going on and tracking the developments, both in terms of the implementation oversight task force, which, as you may recall, was put in place in order to have more rapid interaction with implementation staff than bringing this whole group together would permit. And then also there is the existence of the client committee, which is really there, again, as some of you may recall, to formalize and direct the instructions of the legal advisors to the group. But it should not act autonomously, and so it's the client committee did meet with Sidley to bring them up to speed last week, and I'm conscious that we need to make sure that the group is plugged into that as well, so that the whole efforts of any work from the IOTF group and the client committee group are synchronized with the CWG. I think those were the main points I wanted to make as sort of introductory remarks. We've also had, obviously, as you will have seen, a lot of email traffic, primarily in relation to the root zone, not quite sure what the RZERC stands for, but the oversight or committee to deal with changes to the root zone. And so we'll need to come and look at that and provide you with some update on the work of the to implement the CSC charter. And finally, then under item 5, to look at the project costs, a little bit of an update on that. So let's go straight on with the implementation update, unless anyone has any questions or issues they'd like to raise now. And thank you, Yuko, Root Zone Evolution Review Committee. Any questions or comments at this stage before we proceed to item 2 to deal with the implementation update? All right, with that, I'll hand over to Trang, who has been running this project, the implementation work, to give you an update, and we can take any questions or issues as they arise. Over to you, Trang.
Thank you, Jonathan. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you. I hear you fine.
Terrific. Thank you. Hello, everyone. So I will go through a quick update of the various implementation activities occurred since the last CWG meeting. Thank you, Yuko. The first item is the parallel testing. So we are now a little over a month into the 90-day parallel testing period, and everything is progressing smoothly. If things continue to progress smoothly, we expect that the 90-day period would close successfully on July 5th. So that's the end of the 90-day testing period is July 5th. I think we started on the 6th of April. So we'll close on July 5th, and you see the 6th there as you know, the carryover. But hopefully things will continue to progress smoothly. They have so far. So nothing new to report there, which is a good thing. With regards to the root zone maintainer agreement, we are continuing to have conversations and discussions with VeriSign to finalize that document. We are now hoping that this document will be finalized very soon. I don't know that it's going to be the 15th of this month, but certainly by the end of this month, I think we are very hopeful that it could be completed by then. With regards to the named SLEs, as you know, this is a quiet period for that project as we are collecting data and then also working on building the dashboard to ultimately display the service level targets as well as our performance against those targets. As you would recall, we deployed some code changes to be able to collect that data earlier this year, and everything is looking fine so far in terms of our ability to collect the required SLEs that have been defined by the CWG. So the what I can report there is things are progressing smoothly, and we are able to collect the data that we've set out to collect, and you know, so this is, and we will continue to do so with through this quiet period. The agreement that we had with the SLE design team in Marrakesh was that the data collection period would close early July, and between early to mid-July, we would then come back to the design team with our proposed service level target based on the data that we have been able to collect. So things are still progressing smoothly towards that target date. Next slide, please. PTI, there are, I would say, two main track of work that's going on for PTI. One track is the formation of PTI, and then the other track is the ICANN PTI contract. With regards to the formation of PTI, we have shared with the IOTF as well as with SIDLI summaries of the terms of the PTI formation documents, which includes the PTI bylaws, PTI articles of incorporation, and PTI conflict of interest policy. We've received feedback from SIDLI on those summaries of terms, and we are looking through them and then incorporating them into the draft documents that we already have. And we expect that we should be able to share a draft of those documents with the IOTF and with SIDLI for review by Friday of this week. The other track of work as it relates to the ICANN PTI contract, there's also been some movement there. We have drafted a summary of all of the section headers for the naming functions contract, and we also expect that we should be able to share that with the IOTF and SIDLI also this Friday. In terms of how the contract between PTI and ICANN will be structured, we envision that there would be four separate documents. The first document would be a naming function contract between ICANN and PTI that would set out the terms for the performance of the naming function. So that would be the first document. The second document would be an intercompany services agreement between ICANN and PTI. And that document would set out sort of all of the terms relating to the secondment of staff, as well as all of the financial arrangements between ICANN and PTI. The third document would be a protocol parameters subcontracting agreement, and that document would essentially allow ICANN to subcontract the protocol parameters function to PTI. And then the fourth document would be a number of function subcontracting agreement. And again, very similar to the protocol parameters, that agreement would allow ICANN to subcontract the performance of the numbering services to PTI. So those are the four type of documents, contract documents that would exist between ICANN and PTI. And the document that I had talked about earlier is the naming function contract. That's the one that we have a draft of the section headers of the document that will be shared to the IOTF in Sidley this Friday. Next slide, please. ARZERC, or Root Zone Evolution Review Committee, this is the committee that Jonathan had referenced earlier, and I know Alan is going to give an update on that, so I won't go into much detail on that, and we've shared a charter, draft charter document with the group, and I think Alan will talk to that a bit more later in the agenda. The next item is the Customer Standing Committee, or CSC. Again, we have done a lot of work in this area since the last CWG meeting, and I know Donna is going to be providing an update on all of the work that we've done, so I won't spend too much time there. Escalation processes refers to the customer service, the IANA customer service escalation processes. We had a couple of areas where we required clarification, and we brought those points to the IOTF, and Chuck and the design team that worked on the on these processes were able to provide us with the clarification needed. So now we have all of the information that we need, and the next step would be for the IANA team to move forward with updating the necessary process documentations to reflect those changes that the CWG have proposed. So we're well on track there. Next slide, please. As it relates to the ICANN bylaws, all of you know that we are currently in the middle of a 30-day public comment period on the ICANN draft bylaws. So that comment period is expected to close on the 21st of this month. And as you can see there, it is expected that there will be a very short turnaround to summarize and analyze the comments and then update the bylaws as necessary so that the ICANN board would adopt them on the 27th of May. I think that is the end of the update that I have for you today. So, Jonathan, I will pause and take any questions or comments.
Thank you very much, Trang. So let me call for any questions, comments, or input. Greg, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Thank you. Let me gallop in here. Greg Shatton, for the record. On the very last, or one of the very last things you mentioned, the updating of the ICANN bylaws, what is the plan and process between the 21st, when the comment period closes, and the 27th, or whenever the kind of the next the step of having it go to the board, I guess it is, comes up? How is that being handled?
Thank you for the question, Greg, and I know that others, I think Matthew had also raised such a question via the bylaws coordination mail list, and Shireen had responded that Teresa will be sending out an email a little later today with the details on what would occur between May 21st and May 27th. Essentially, as you know, there will be a summary and analysis of the comment that had been submitted. ICANN staff is certainly expected to do the bulk of that, and then in coordination with Sidley would review the comments and update as necessary, also within also coordinating with the bylaws coordination group as well. I think at a high level, I think that's what we could expect. But again, more details to be shared later, you know, via Teresa.
Thanks, Trang. I'll assume you'll come back in with another hand, Greg, if there's a follow-up point to that. In the meantime, we'll go to Olivier.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Olivier Clapin-Oblon speaking. And following up on this issue of the public comment period, I gather some kind of a summary will be made for the board to be able to look at it. Will this group, will our group be able to have access to this? And are we expected to be solicited as well on any feedback? Obviously, because there are comments that will be made here, and I guess many of us have been following this for a very long time.
Olivia, when you refer to our group, you mean specifically the CWG stewardship?
Correct, yes. I mean, the CWG stewardship has been putting this whole proposal, the initial proposal, together. The bylaws have been drafted by Sidley and others. And so the question is, if there are any significant changes that will be made, will our working group be solicited to comment on this? Or is it just a thing of it's completely out of our hands now and it's really between the board and the community?
Frank, do you have any comment or point on that?
Olivia, I'm not certain I understand your question fully. Are you?
So, Olivia speaking. Will this working group, CCWG, CWGINA, be asked its input once the board has got all the public comments in? What I'm saying is that if the board receives public comments that make some, that ask for significant changes to the bylaws as they are currently on our table, will they come back to us, or is it all completely in the board's hands and effectively we're just passengers now, seeing the, you know, things move forward without any more further input required from the CWGINA?
So, Olivia, my expectation is that at minimum, if there are comments that come in that would require changes or updating of the draft ICANN bylaws, that would be coordinated with Sidley and also with the bylaws coordination group that has been in place since Marrakesh and has worked on the drafting of the document itself. And I know Jonathan and Lisa and others from the CWG are represented in that bylaws coordination group and would expect it to be acted as liaison back to the CWG. So I would assume from that perspective there would be coordination, you know, with the CWG if there are any updates necessary to the draft bylaws.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Trang. And I guess I'll make one additional comment there, that really the primary objective of this group has been to ensure that the bylaws work that follows from primarily driven by the accountability group is consistent with the requirements of this group. I mean, so I think we have a secondary requirement, if you like, but that's the key thought from my perspective. Go ahead, Paul. Paul Cain, come in.
So thank you very much. Not related to the bylaws specifically, you mentioned, Trang, that the staff of PTI would be effectively on secondment from ICANN. I remember that ICANN were going to prepare for us, justifying why secondment rather than direct employment was favoured. Have had sight of that paper, please, but I also support the concept of secondment. I see there's some significant merit in secondment, but I think as a matter of process, it would be sensible for the CWG members to have sight of the rationale behind secondment and also the money flow. So if the money is to go to PTI and PTI effectively is paying the staff, albeit the staff on secondment, and paying other operational costs rather than coming out of ICANN's budget. But I can't recall seeing the paper that ICANN staff promised to deliver to the CWG, but it may be I've slipped up. I don't know. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Yes, we have been working on that paper. It has not yet been shared. We do have a draft of it. There's one item that we are needing the ICANN HR team help with in clarifying. They're working on that, and as soon as we have the answer, we can go ahead and finalize the document and then share it with the IOTF. But it's very close to being done, and in fact, I'm hoping that we can also release at the same time that we release the PTI formation documents as well as the section headers for the naming functions contract.
So thank you for the clarification, Trang. So just to be clear, concept of whether staff are seconded or directly employed, although I personally favour secondment, hasn't actually been ratified by the CWG yet because we haven't had the paper.
That's right, Paul. What had happened, if I can recount the steps here a little bit, is we had made the suggestion to the IOTF and had gotten broad support from the IOTF, but the request was that ICANN staff share a paper on the details of how to do that with the IOTF first, and then I would assume that once all of the details are shared with the IOTF, it would then flow to the CWG.
Thanks, Paul. It's a good catch, well remembered, and thanks for your answer, Trang. I suppose I would just pick up one small detail there, and others may quibble on this one, but really the purpose of the CWG in its current incarnation and the IOTF to the extent that it seeks to do the same thing is to ensure that the work by Trang and the team at ICANN on implementation is consistent with the letter and spirit of the proposal. I think that the subtle difference there is we are not required to formally ratify each detail, but what we are required to do is make sure that nothing that is implemented is inconsistent with our work. So it's subtle, but I think that the outcome is the same. We would like to see that paper, and we have previously agreed to see that, so it's a good point and well remembered. Thanks, Chuck, for your check mark, recognizing that point, I had a lead, and Olivier, your hand is up, so come back in, Olivier.
Thank you, Jonathan. Olivier Crépin-Ablon speaking, and you very eloquently said what I meant, and I apologize for my lack of ability to explain those things, but should we notify the board, or I guess we as a new, that we would indeed wish to see the final results before it be released, or so as to make sure that it is still in line?
Olivia, the final result of what? The bylaws work or some other piece of implementation work?
No, the bylaws work, the implementation, the whole process, if you wish. Since we've got this consultation period, if the board introduces any amendments based on the input that was received at consultation, I just want to be sure that whatever the work of our working group has taken place and the spirit of what we've done is going to remain in line with what's going to be in the bylaws at the end of the day. If it's possible to completely change the bylaws through a public commenting period, which goes against the spirit of this working group, then obviously we need to flag this.
Yes, surely. I agree. We should remain vigilant and be prepared to flag that should that be the case. Make no mistake. Chuck?
Thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate it. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Chuck.
Good. So I've heard a couple people say that that the CWG needs to see this proposal in terms of the relationship between the PTI staff and ICANN. But I think it's more than that. In Marrakesh, there were some strong concerns expressed publicly about what's being proposed there. Now, personally, I'm relatively optimistic that it will all come out okay, and the CWG will support that. But until we see it, we don't really know. And that brings me to my second and related point is that we need to see that relatively soon so that any interaction and decision-making that needs to happen before we get even to the end of the public comment period can happen, because there's only a week after that when the board's going to take action. So I don't think it's just enough that the CWG see this. We're going to have to review it and respond, and there needs to be time after we do that to deal with any concerns. Thanks.
Thanks, Chuck. So it's clear there's a feeling that we need to be on top of this and have the opportunity to ensure that it is consistent with what was intended. And like you, I was worried in Marrakesh, and I'm less so now, but perhaps that's because we may have had the benefit of regular updates via the IOTF. So this is part of the purpose of this call, is to ensure that we synchronize that. Greg?
Thanks, Greg Shatton again. And just briefly, I agree with Chuck. And while I think the secondment point particularly probably should work as long as it's business as usual, the issue is how the secondment deals with the issue of separability and potential separation, which are more or less the same thing. And what sort of end game is planned for that, because the concern is if PTI is unable to be self-sufficient because its employees are not its employees and will not be available to it in the event of separation, then the concept of separability has been crippled. I understand the concerns that have led to secondment, so the question, I guess, becomes what is the end game when things change from business as usual to separation time that will preserve PTI as a going concern post-separation? Thanks.
Yeah, Greg, that's an interesting question. Other may want to speak to it, and it could be take us down quite a significant route, potentially a distraction. I think certainly this was explored in earlier conversations, and one of the points that was raised was that in the event that PTI was performing so badly and that the requirement for this, the associated requirement for some form of separation was required, it wasn't a given that the same staff would therefore be transferred with the function if and when it were to move. So I guess it depends on your perspective of separation. I understand here you refer to the prospect of the same subsidiary entity being perhaps moved under some other, becoming the subsidiary or associated entity to another. But it's not the only way in which separation could occur. So whilst I recognize the point, I question whether that's absolutely linked.
If I could just come back on that.
Sure.
I recognize there are multiple potential separation scenarios depending upon where the problem lies. Clearly, if PTI itself is the problem and is underperforming, the likelihood would be the communities would fire PTI, as it were, and put something else in its place, either operated by ICANN or operated by a third party. But one and another scenario, could have the problem, being at the ICANN level, or could just be that, people want a change for whatever other reason. But one of the key scenarios is the one where PTI is valued but is felt to be better performing completely independently of ICANN. And that's kind of the reason why PTI exists as a separate entity at all. So I think that it's not a distraction, but rather it's a core requirement that PTI can be spun off as a going concern. And I don't think that means that secondment doesn't work. I think that means that secondment has to be resolved in a way that's appropriate at the time of separation or prior to that, such as a conversion of those employees to employees of PTI, subject to not treating them like chattel. But frankly, spin-outs and spin-offs and divestitures occur all the time, and by and large, the employees go with the company. So, this is not unusual. This is something that can be solved, but it can't wait to be solved. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. I'll go straight to Aubrey then.
Thank you. This is Aubrey speaking. I guess I have a slightly different view on it, in that the primary scenario is, do these people who you quite rightly identify as not chattel want to go if we don't second them now? And if we tell them, sorry, we're spinning your jobs out to a separate company, and we don't know the answer to that. And so, but we have heard that there are issues there. So I think that is the primary one we have to look at. Whenever there's a change in the company, the people have the option of staying or not staying, and that company has the ability of incenting them to stay or not stay. So I don't see it as an issue that can be resolved at this point. I think that the spinning out of PTI, if that were to ever occur, is something that would take a full level set of negotiations of all sorts, including with the people, in terms of whether they wanted to move or to stay. And that's exactly the issue we have to deal with today. So I actually don't see how we can move the problem to the future when what we're really doing is solving it for today. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Alan is next in line. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. Avery covered pretty much what I was going to say. We were using the term chattel before. Slavery also comes to mind. We can't control what people are going to do sometime in the future. We don't even know if they'll be the same people. There's no way we can make commitments that if we transfer them to PTI now, then we'll be able to do something with them at some time in the future when we don't even know what that something is. Today's transition is far more onerous in my mind. And there are so many kinds of separation, and this, it is not at all clear what separation will mean if and when we ever have to do it, because it can be done in a whole bunch of different ways for a bunch of different reasons, and there's no way we can commit the people that will be in place then, regardless of whether they're PTI employees or seconded. So I think today's problems are the ones we have to address. There's no way we can address tomorrow's problems when we don't even know what the scenario is we're trying to address at this point. So I think we really have no choice. Thank you.
Thanks. It feels to me like this is a useful discussion, but really there are two parts to it. One is making sure we understand the motivation and perspective on the secondment, which I'm quite sure not all of us do, at least in its entirety. That information is outstanding, so we need to get that and get that to the group as soon as possible. I think the second is, what are the terms and conditions of those secondments, and how do they impact on the way in which this group devise the PTI and all the functions and performances that we expect it to be able to undertake, from the most basic day-to-day purposes right through till the eventual separation. So I suggest to you that we wait and get the motivation document and keep a close eye on the implementation of that, the proposed implementation of that secondment with these topics in mind. And otherwise, we're talking a little theoretically. So that seems like this is a useful preparatory discussion, but absent those documents, we'll have limits as to what we can do. So, Greg, I see your hand is up, but I think that's your previous old hand. Wait for you to withdraw that or speak up.
It's actually a new hand. I just want to say that at a minimum, it should be clear now that ICANN would not interfere with the secondees becoming employees of an independent PTI. Any more details obviously can be worked out at that time, but that's my concern, is avoiding some future where the desire of the community is for PTI to become separated and to remain as the IANA provider, and the fact that its employees are employees not of itself but of ICANN and are being loaned out, couldn't be used to make that a very distasteful or even impossible result. So I think that's all that really needs to be solved now, is to make sure that there is a path to employment for the secondees, and that path won't be interfered with at the time comes. Obviously, choices can be made by people. That's the point of saying they're not chattel. But at the same time, if the idea is to keep the band together and put it on the road, they shouldn't all of a sudden find out that they're being recalled. Thank you.
That's a good point. And so I think that's something to look out for. And it's a question of sort of push and pull, because it's a question of what is there anything being done to actually restrict or prohibit that happening that makes it difficult? And is there anything that's being done to within PTI that makes it difficult or impossible to facilitate that? So I think you're right. We can keep an eye out for that. And I'll stick to my previous proposal then, that we look at both the motivation and the proposed implementation and review that with these points in mind. So let's move on to item three. Sharon from Sidley has kindly joined us to this point, in spite of the fact that it was relatively short notice. And I'm going to move us on then, because this is in and around the legal documents and legal issues. And really, they form into three categories. First of all, the PTI formation documents, for which we have received heads of terms, and Sidley have commented on those. And if you've had the opportunity to go through that, you'll see there are numerous points in which Sidley seeks or suggests that the CWG consider key areas within that. So there's actually quite some work to be done in that. Second is the ICANN PTI contract, for which we have no foundation document at this stage. So there is little we can do but to flag that that's in the pipeline. And then third will be the IANA IPR, and we can cover that absent Sidley. So for the moment, at least for the purposes of this call, for the moment it's really the PTI formation documents. And I wonder, Sharon, if there are any sort of remarks you'd like to make on your comments to those heads of terms. As I say, I've been through it and picked out there are a number of points where the CWG needs to make some decisions, and we could work through that now, but maybe there are some high-level points you'd like to make, and I don't want to unfairly put you on the spot, because I know you didn't have much preparation time for this, but if there is anything you'd like to, please feel free to come in. Otherwise, and in any event, if we could pull that document up into the Adobe room, that may be helpful. Go ahead, Sharon.
Thanks, Jonathan. Unfortunately, I don't have any prepared remarks. I've been on calls all morning, actually working on a spinoff, which sounded quite relevant to what you were just talking about. But I don't have any prepared remarks. I think the table speaks for itself. What we tried to do there is we went through the heads of what do you call it, Jonathan? We call it a term sheet, but I can't remember the UK term. But the term
heads
sheet.
Heads of agreement.
Thank you. So we went through what ICANN Legal had put together. We referenced what the CWG proposal said on it, if anything. And sometimes, you know, there's detail that goes beyond what the proposal would have covered. And then we had comments where we noted if there was a legal requirement we needed to conform to, or we noted if we thought there was a divergence from the terms being proposed as against the final proposal. So hopefully this is a helpful roadmap for ICANN Legal as they're drafting to cover some of the things that they might not have contemplated in their original term sheet. So I think otherwise, as I said, I think it's self-explanatory, and happy though to chat on another call if you want to walk through it in more detail.
Thanks, Sharon, and apologies again for putting you on the spot. But I think
my sense is that the group may not have digested this properly. We got quite pulled off on the whole issue of the Root Zone committee, and so it seems to me like what we need to do is go through this and provide some structured points and questions for the next meeting that we provide the answers to, and ideally start to do that online, given that the timeframes are on the mailing list, because I'm not unless anyone has any particular comments on key areas of this. I mean, for me, there were a number of different points that were raised about, it's really about the ability to appoint or not the directors, key expectations of them. There's a bunch in that right-hand column, which is the Sidley comments. So I could just take you to an example, page 13, element 8, which is the director terms. And it says CWG to advise if any preference on the lengths of terms and term limits. So, you know, and there's a California law requirement in that instance that the terms are 4 years or less. Now, in my view, my personal view on that example might be that they should be 3 years and be constrained to no more than three consecutive terms. What Sidley also did through this work was highlight, as I understand it, Sharon, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you, in bringing up the ICANN bylaws, you essentially highlighted a parallel term in the ICANN bylaws as a point of reference, and or to the extent that pertained to that particular point. And so that's also a very useful term of reference, because you think, the way ICANN treats its board, for example, is like this, and there were questions, for example, around the term limits, around whether or not there'd be remuneration, and so on. And I think we just need to systematically go through that and essentially provide the answers. The most productive way to do that may be to simply prepare a series of answers and then work those through with the group rather than have them as open questions.
Sharon?
Go ahead.
There's one other point I wanted to make, because it may not be immediately apparent as you're reviewing the document, and that is that there are certain places where we've noted that ICANN as the member would have the right to do X, Y, and Z. You know, you might make a choice whether it's ICANN the member or the board of PTI, and you may think, we're not sure we're comfortable if it's just given all that power is given to ICANN as the member. But just the thing to keep in mind, it's very important that ICANN is constrained within the ICANN bylaws as to what it can do to change the PTI governing documents, to change the PTI contract, and those constraints are supported by the empowered community. So in some places where you'll see we recommend or we think it's appropriate for ICANN as a member to have the power, that is so that when it goes back up to ICANN, the community has the ultimate power. So it's a little bit turned on its head, and I just wanted to kind of put that reminder out there.
Thanks, Sharon. That's a helpful clarification. Greg?
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. One point that I see that stuck out at me as I reviewed the heads of terms that I didn't see commented on by Sidley is on page 18 of the chart, row 15, where the officers, in addition to the standard complement of officers for a U.S. nonprofit, president, secretary, treasurer, has a chair, parenthetical, director, selected by ICANN, not selected by the board of PTI, and that this person seems to be listed as an officer of the company. And I'm not sure if the term director means a managing director, or if this means that this person is on the board of directors, and if this person is the chairman of the board of the PTI board. And if it seems not entirely a foregone conclusion that the chair of the board would be appointed by ICANN, although since it has the controlling number of seats, it probably ends up with the right to appoint the chair unless we put in a supermajority that would require at least one non-ICANN vote to appoint a chair. But the root point is that this chair officer is an unusual officer to see, not one I've seen ever, though I don't spend my time in corporate formation as much as Sharon, Holly, and those colleagues do, but I've seen my fair share. And I just don't know what the heck this means and how this is supposed to be and why this exists and why it's appointed by ICANN, et cetera. Thanks.
Okay, well, let's take that as a direct question if Sharon is able to and prepared to try and respond to that, and then we'll go on to the next points. But go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. I think that's a good point. And it's always the case with term sheets. It's hard to know because things are so abbreviated. But the way we had read that was that ICANN would be selecting the chair to chair the board meetings as among the PTI directors. But it's a good question, and I think it does bear clarifying what the intention is, why it's put in the officer category, and then also just confirming that CWG is comfortable that ICANN would be selecting the chair of the board. I think it has the power to do that indirectly by having the seats, to do it by a majority action too on the board, but I think it's still something that's a good point we should clarify.
Yeah, so that's a good question. Just a brief follow-up on that. When I read it, it seemed to me that there was nothing to preclude one of the independent directors chairing the board should ICANN appoint that director to that position. Is that correct?
That's how I would read it as well, Jonathan, that they're making the selection among the five directors. They can decide among the five who should be the chair or the lead director.
Okay, thanks, Sharon. All right, over to you next, Paul. Okay.
So thank you very much, Sharon, for joining the call, particularly at late notice. I listened to the recent recording of the contract and the ability of the contract, or the inability of the contract, to be changed both by ICANN without the consent, or the PTI board, without the consent, effectively, of the community. One of the issues that pretty important to the country code top-level domain registry community is the very limited remit that PTI has with respect to CCTLD registries. And I appreciate it can be captured within the contract, but there are many cultures outside of the Western culture that look to the formation and founding documents of a corporation to ascertain what that corporation can do, particularly where the relationship is parent-child. There is a perception, I understand, that the contract cannot be easily changed, but there is a perception that the parent-child relationship can be changed relatively easily. And there is current ongoing litigation in the U.S., where certain country codes are under dispute, not necessarily for redelegation, but it's more associated with the property issue. So I would very much welcome understanding, not necessarily on this call, but certainly having a better understanding of why it is not prudent to capture Annex C, 7 and 8 of the CWG proposals, what's contained within that, in both the contract and the bylaws to accommodate both the Western mindset and others, because this is a very important issue for CCTLDs in terms of ensuring stability of operation for ICANN. And just to highlight, in the GTLD world, ICANN is the authority. In the CCTLD world, it is a local matter, a local sovereignty matter, and effectively the IANA is advised as to the entries that they should make in the IANA database, unless there's been an explicit agreement that authority is handed over to ICANN to fulfill that role. So I think it's very important it is both in the contract, but also in the founding documents of PTI. Thanks.
Sharon, did you want to respond to that at all now, or is this something, I mean, we may need to have a specific session within the client committee where we dive into this in a little more detail and make sure that it's clearly understood what Paul's concerns are, if they're not sufficiently understood now, and how we might respond to those.
Thanks, Jonathan. I agree it may be a separate call. I think the comment I had made on the client committee call on this point is that I think it can go in either place, and I don't have any, you know, firm view as to whether it needs to be one or the other. I think it's appropriate in either document, and if there's a view of CWG that there's greater comfort if it's in the bylaws, I think that's okay. I think we all recognize it has to be documented in one of those two places, and it has to be clear when you go up the chain to the ICANN bylaws that those things cannot be unilaterally changed. And notwithstanding the parent-child, you know, situation, that the parent has, you know, a grandparent or whatever, if you will, the EC that has power too. And so it is not, there is not total authority by ICANN to make changes, even though there is this subsidiary-like arrangement. So again, I think it can go in either place, and I'm happy to discuss further where people feel it's most appropriate.
Yeah, and so I think that was my understanding from the client committee call, that at a fundamental level it was equally strong in both places. But it's clear that Paul, having listened to that, has concerns remaining. So my suggestion is that we don't dive into it in too much detail now. We note this as an action that further direct discussion needs to take place on this item within a specific portion of a client committee call to see whether either the point is accepted that it needs to be in both or in one particular place, or whether Paul is satisfied that the previous answer was then sufficient. But that we have the conversation, not to keep the group out of it, but just it's a pretty detailed and fine point that may need some more work. So, Alan, I'll come to you in a moment. I just want to make sure we've got any other actions so far. While I'll just give Marika an opportunity to capture this point. In fact, I'll go back to number one in a moment. Alan, why don't you come in now? Because I suspect yours is a follow-on point on this, and then we may be able to wrap things up in this area. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, it is a follow-on comment to Paul's comment. We have the luxury right now we're creating PTI, but we have talked about separation interminably in this group, and sometime in the future, it might not be PTI. We may delegate the IANA function to Jonathan Robinson Incorporated, or the Internet Society, or U.S. Steel. In all of those cases, we're not going to have the luxury of having the formative documents for that entity being at our command, and we will have to lock everything in it into the contract. So I really don't see any difference now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I was just putting a note, Paul, if you could just make sure you make it clear what the annexes were that you were referring to in the previous point also.
There you go, Annex C, 7 and 8. All right. Going before we close on this item and the document that you've got in front of you, I am not convinced that we as a group will do the job quickly and thoroughly enough on this document in front of you. My temptation is to delegate it either to one or two volunteers who are prepared to work through it and provide what needs to be. What we really need is the fifth column, which is the CWG response, and somebody needs to draft that CWG response. Now, we either ask for staff help to do this, or seek some volunteers, or ask the IOTF to handle it. But one way or another, I think just throwing it open to the whole group is unlikely to make the progress we need. So any thoughts on feedback on the practicalities of that? Should we ask the implementation group to do it, which is the lead of the drafting team, or are they overworked already? Or is there anyone who's prepared to make a go at populating that fifth column with the draft CWG responses? Well, absent any volunteers, I'm going to certainly suggest that we leave it open to the CWG, of course, to provide comments on any of those. I'm going to ask staff to try and capture those comments, and really I'd encourage the group to be sort of solution-oriented, if you like, to try and answer the question being asked of the CWG. I think we'll try and progress this within the IOTF as well, the Implementation Oversight Group, which is the co-chairs and the drafting and the design team leads. So we'll try and make some progress. But if anyone has any contributions, in particular if you can highlight where you think CWG answers to those questions are, and I'm going to ask staff to hold the pen on populating a fifth column, which is CWG response. Thanks, Avery, for your support, and Matthew, on trying to get this moving in the IOTF. So it's just a smaller task-oriented group, and we really do need to there's a sense that time is of the essence here now. So thank you, Cheryl, for your check mark there as well. All right, so I asked Sharon to be on. She was able to give us this half hour, which is perfect. We seem to have had you, Sharon, on for the right time and the right place, so thank you very much. And with that, we'll probably move the group on to the next item. Well, we can deal with the IANA IPR, but we don't necessarily need you to be on the line for that. So, Greg, why don't you just, as briefly as you can manage, bring us up to speed with where we are on the IANA IPR, and really the outcome of this is, I'm doing this for the sake of good order. What we want to do, what the objective here is, to pass this IPR document through the client committee onto SIDLI for review, and that's the desired outcome of this conversation. And as you'll know, with the client committee, the client committee doesn't act autonomously; it needs the authority of the CWG to give it that, to empower it to make those instructions. But I think before doing that, before seeking that empowerment, it's worthwhile, Greg, just giving you a few minutes update as to where we are and why we need that. So go ahead, Greg.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jonathan, and Greg Shatton again for the record. Following Helsinki, and not too long after that, we established a fairly stable draft of principal terms for the IANA IPR documents and underlying concept as well. This was established in a coordination group that included representatives from the names and protocols. Sorry, following Marrakesh, not Helsinki. I'm already projecting into the future. And Marrakesh and Helsinki are so similar, I was confused. We had a multi-community group representing the relevant sectors. We worked together very well and came up with this essentially stable draft. This draft has already been sent by the numbers and protocol teams to their respective counsel for attorney review and comment. We had initially contemplated that it might be a useful process to wait until their counsel reverted and then to have our counsel review the marked up draft or marked up drafts from those groups. Life being what it is, those have not yet reverted. And rather than wait any longer, it seemed prudent to have our draft reviewed by Sidley, our counsel, and likely Josh Hoffheimer, who has been working with us for quite some time, to review and comment and give us theirs, and then we'll have we may have three markups, which we'll need to harmonize and reconcile, but that's fine too. So the point here is to have the draft, certify the draft can be shipped off to Sidley, along with a couple of follow-on comments that, as you may have seen, that came in the IPR coordination list, and get the comments back so that we keep things moving. Maybe Sidley will come after the other two revert, maybe before, maybe all at the same time, but the point is just to get the blood flowing on our side, and you know, Sidley have a decent chance to a decent interval to review this while we're in this current situation. Thanks.
Perfect. Thanks, Greg. So, as I said in the preamble, the objective here is to, and Greg is further developed that, is to hand this over to Sidley for review, and we want the client committee to be empowered to do that. Are there any questions, comments on this process or the substance of it and where we intend to go for now? Thanks for your check mark, Cheryl. Any other comments or points, concerns or questions? Well, you see, Marika anticipates this in the notes, which is very helpful. Thank you. Our action is to empower the client committee to request Sidley to go ahead and review these. Absent any objection, we'll take that as an acceptance by the CWG to go ahead and do that. I'm just wondering if there's anything else we need from you in terms of the client committee and the prior point. Clearly, rolling back slightly, when the ICANN PTI contract heads of terms come out from ICANN, we will want Sidley to take a look at those. So I think formally we should empower the client committee to hand those across and seek Sidley's input on those as well. So we might as well ask you for that. In addition, now, so that if you have any concerns with that, please let us know. But for the sake of good order, we should also empower the client committee to instruct Sidley to review those heads of terms on the IANA contract as soon as they come out. Thank you, Marika and Cheryl, for the support in the notes there. Moving us on then to the next item, which is item 4, and this is the CSC Charter and the Root Zone Evolution Committee. Let's deal with the CSC first. And if Donna is here, I won't steal her thunder at all and just let her take this on right away. So Donna, if you are able, if you could just set the scene very briefly and establish for the group where we are, just so that it forms a relevant update, that would be helpful.
Thanks, Jonathan. So I honestly don't understand the context for this, but the CSC Charter was actually developed as part of the transition proposal, so it was signed off as part of that process. You know, we did... as a result of the work that Sidley did when they reviewed the transition proposal, there were some clarifying questions asked and we responded to those. Similarly, we did those with the bylaws as well. And Trang and Yuko have prepared a document that actually captures all of that clarification. So we do have a clarifying document, I suppose, that now sits with the charter. But from my perspective, I don't think there's anything outstanding on the CSC charter. We move forward with the one that was in the IANA transition proposal. That's the one that the CSC will work to in the first 12 months of operation, and there will be, you know, 12 months after they've been in operation, there is provision to review the charter. I think that's kicked off by the Registry Stakeholder Group and CCNSO. So, Jonathan, I don't know if you wanted anything more than that, but happy to answer any questions.
I think that's it, Donna. Given that all the discussion that went around on the Roosehorn Charter, it wasn't clear to everyone that just from memory that the CSC Charter was indeed defined in the document. So I think that's the first important point to have established, and second of all, of how we're going about with the implementation, which you've covered. So really, the opportunity is just to make sure that the group is updated and has the opportunity to ask any questions or make any comments, which, given the way you've described it, it may not be, but just to pause for a moment and see if anyone has any questions or comments in this regard. Okay, seeing none, thanks, Donna. It does mean the group is at least appraised of where we are at and where this is going. So now on to the root zone point, which is where you got a draft charter prepared by the implementation staff that was circulated, and it sparked off a slew of discussion in and around this topic. It seemed to me that we more or less worked through that, through the discussion on the list, but I don't want to presume or preempt that outcome. So, are there any comments or points people would like to make on the draft charter as you've seen and the key changes that need to be made? I acknowledge here that the document you see in front of you is the draft pre all the comments, so it hasn't absorbed the changes. And so I think if key changes are required, we need to get a red line edit on the back of those comments and make sure they're sorted out. Alan, go ahead with your point first.
Thank you very much. To answer your question specifically, I'm not sure what words in the charter are the offensive ones, so I'll be quite candid on that. But let me go back a little bit on the history of it. The DTF was charged with the understanding that the NTIA would no longer have an approval process associated with what IANA does, and that related primarily to the architecture of the root zone, which is obviously something critical to us, and also operational changes. Currently, the NTIA gets involved in pretty much anything that IANA does that is not routine business. So it ranges from the contents of a report they generate or a new report they want to generate. If there were to be any significant systems changes, including automation-type changes, the NTIA has gotten heavily involved in that. And so we were charged with saying, the NTIA is not there. Who, if anyone, approves or vets the things that IANA is going to do? This is not measuring it after the fact, but essentially prior authorization to do things. The conclusion DTF came to was small, regular day-to-day things. We hire professional staff. They should be able to make reasonable decisions. Major things which could have significant operational impact on the Internet should be reviewed, and we came up with this concept of a committee with, you know, wise people who could then consult other people, and the board essentially rubber-stamping their recommendation to approve any given change. The tacit thing in my mind, notwithstanding the fact that the CWG was looking at names, is we were looking at the NTIA authorization function for IANA. Perhaps an incorrect one. It was never really spoken, but that was sort of the understanding in my mind. There is, once the charter was published, and I can't really, I've gone through the emails and I'm not quite sure what triggered it, but the focus was on is the this, what we're now calling the RZERC, going to pass judgment on operational changes associated with the other communities. And we're largely talking about software changes or systems changes that may be caused by because of a need to upgrade systems or may be caused by some new function that they have to perform that requires some large amount of development. In my mind, I don't really care how it's done. We have several choices. We can either say that the RZERC is only there formally for names-related things, and if there are operational changes associated with the other communities, the other communities may choose to simply say, we trust IANA. If it breaks, we'll get them afterwards. Or they may choose to put some level of function of prior authorization in place. In one of the emails, it was said that the other two proposals included such a prior authorization function. I personally can't find it, but maybe it's there. If the other communities are happy with either in the belief that they do have some related function to prior authorize such changes, or they don't care whether they're authorized or not, and presume the NTIA doesn't care either, then we don't have a problem. So I have no real problem saying that what RZERC does is only names community related, is names function related. I don't actually see any words and a cursory review of the charter which implies anything else. So I'm not sure what has to be changed. I'm certainly happy to have someone else point out the offensive words. In fact, because we call it the RZERC root zone, it is really focused on the root zone. In my mind, it was going to do something else, but maybe that's moot. So the real question is, are the other operational communities happy with us not getting involved? Based on the comments on the list, it would sound so. Is the NTIA happy? I have no clue. And so I'm happy to say the RZERC and the function is purely names related, and who IANA goes to, if anyone, for systems type changes associated with the other communities, I guess is up to IANA.
Thanks, Alan. I certainly picked up a couple of key points in those threads. One of which Elisa's also touched on in the chat, was this point of authority, where the authority lay. And if you look at the purpose, the very first line, it says review and provide input. It doesn't say hold authority. And so it seems to me that point is, at least as far as I can see, largely moot. It's clear where the authority lies, but it's also clear that this is a group specifically designed to provide expert and technical input and review of any key changes proposed, or indeed to propose changes should they be relevant. So that was the one point I was certainly aware of, was the one of the authority. The second was the involvement or not of other communities. Now, it seems to make sense to me that at least there is an invitation to those outside of the names community to participate here. But again, as you say, within the charter itself, the wording it seems to me to be pretty clear that this is about the root zone and dealing with, therefore, names-related functions. Notwithstanding your prior perceptions, so those seem to me to be the key things. It's scope, i.e. names, and participation of the others, of other communities. And I guess it feels to me like we should communicate that. And then there's Avery's point, where
she highlights in the chat that isn't the trust of the other communities within ICANN. And let's be clear that the numbers and protocols communities contract directly with ICANN. The fact that ICANN chooses to fulfill the functions it is providing to those groups via PTI, which is a key change, I think, since Marrakesh. It wasn't clear in Marrakesh that all functions, previous IANA functions, would continue to be performed in PTI, notwithstanding ICANN's contractual relationship with the other operating communities and PTI's direct fulfillment of the names function. So I am not sure that we haven't gone around in a full circle and come back to where we were, and that having explored the issues, that we're in a satisfactory place. But Alan or others, please come in if that's not the case.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. In terms of the authority, the CWG report makes it very clear. The authority is with the ICANN board. And the authority was vested with the ICANN board on our recommendation. This is a group that at one point we were considering it logically a subcommittee of the board. This is a group that advises the board on whether to rubber stamp. And largely it should be a rubber stamp unless the board thinks this committee has shirked its responsibility. There is a rationale, and you sort of implied it in what you were saying. The other communities contract with ICANN. If ICANN wants to be in a position where it has a high level of confidence that IANA is not going to do something which will get ICANN in trouble, because essentially if IANA does something which messes things up, ICANN is going to be one of the organizations that suffer. Because it is the contractor for the other communities. So it is quite reasonable for ICANN, on its own volition, to say it wants the RZERC to look at any substantive changes that are made in the other communities as well. And if indeed we want that to happen, the wording in the charter probably has to be slightly altered to make that really clear. But that's really a contractual issue between ICANN and IANA, not necessarily between the communities and ICANN.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. And I think that's consistent with the point that Matthew Shears has made in the chat, which is really that,
and maybe the way to deal with this is a twofold. I mean, Matthew's made the point that his understanding is the contracts or MOUs are not yet finalized between the other operating communities and ICANN, and so they may choose or wish to refer to this Root Zone Evolution Review Committee. It strikes me that there's a couple of points here.
Jonathan, may I come in for a moment, because I didn't answer your second question.
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that the RZERC has to invite and it specified people from the other communities, because the other communities are implicitly tied in. You know, the Root Zone is architected by the IETF. You know, not the technical part, but the logical description of it. And clearly, we need, you know, we need IETF people involved in this process. We want people from the Root Zone operators. There's no doubt in my mind that all of the other communities have to be there as part of the consultative group. But that's moot, even if we're only looking at names functions. So that I believe is quite clear. They could refuse to participate, although I can't imagine that happening. Thank you.
All right. Well, here's a practical way forward that I suggest. We've effectively had the release of this document to the group, substantial email discussion, now in effect a first reading in front of the group. It strikes me that we need to do two things. One, we need to actually actively review and propose any changes to this document to give our direct feedback back to the implementation staff. And two, it probably will do no harm for us to communicate this charter the composition, the proposed composition of the group, and the position to the other operating communities, and make sure that they are aware that it's going on, and just simply reiterate its existence and its function and as defined by the charter, and see if we get any other feedback or points. But that strikes me as the way forward. Give this a final rework for any comments or input, and we could communicate it as a draft, but nevertheless give it a final review, a second reading, and at the next CWG meeting, and either before or after that communicate it to the other operating communities and make sure that that's, and I've no doubt people are aware this is going on, but just it may be useful that the chairs simply flag it and indicate the perceived limited scope, but also the desire to have input and participation. And if then there's a choice to do something other than this, that is the prerogative of those groups, those communities. But at least they know what's available here. How does that sound? Have I charted a sensible way forward? Alan, is that a new hand?
Yeah, that is a new hand. I think the issue that you raised and I picked up on is something that I don't think we want to ignore, but I'm not quite sure who to talk to about it. The email thread was whether the operational communities need this or not. And the thing that came out here is today is ICANN, as the contractor who will be subcontracting the work for the other communities, does ICANN need this function for the work to be done by other communities? And I don't know the answer to that, and I'm not quite sure who to ask. I was hoping David Conrad was on this call, and he may well be the right one to involve in that. And I'd be glad to do that if this group says so.
I think David may have just joined. I don't know if he heard that and if he would care to respond. David, I'll just invite you to, if you did hear what Alan was saying, but you may not have picked up on all of it. And you may not have had the benefit of all of the prior discussion.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, we can.
Okay. Apologies. I just got out of another meeting and just like 5 seconds ago was able to connect the Adobe. So I would have to ask that the question be repeated.
I can try to do that, Jonathan, if you'd like.
Please go ahead, Alan.
Yeah. David, the discussion on the list was really, do the other operational communities want this group to intervene on their behalf to verify, system changes? And I think the main issue is software changes that might be necessary in the future to support the other operational communities, either redoing software or adding some new capability that isn't there today. And it dawns on me as we were speaking, and something that Jonathan brought up, that since ICANN is the contractor, ICANN has agreements with the other communities and will subcontract with PTI, does ICANN want to be able to vet operational changes associated with the other communities just to protect itself, that if indeed we need to submit operational changes with the root zone to this committee for verification and approval by the board, does ICANN want any operational changes for the other communities to be similarly vetted?
I obviously can't speak for ICANN.
No.
But yeah, just saying. So my understanding of the original discussions on the RZARC concept was that, it was intended to be the place that would provide the advice to ICANN's board about significant architectural changes to the systems that are involved with the unique system of identifiers that the ANA functions operate with. So my guess would be that, you know, if there was a body that's made up of, you know, the community members who are impacted by the potential changes, that the board would probably prefer to have, you know, the input before making the decision from those potentially impacted parties to make sure that everyone is happy. You know, I would also imagine that the board, you know, would review that input, the recommendations are provided by that advisory committee, not in the traditional sense of an AC, but, you know, the people who are providing recommendations and advice, and make a decision based on, you know, the information they have at hand. So in that sense, I would probably say that, you know, the board would probably like to have that capability, have that resource to provide the input on, but you know, is would ICANN corporate? I can't actually say.
Yeah, no, because the alternative in my mind is that for things associated with the other communities, software systems, stuff like that, if they don't go to the ARZERC, then IANA is simply free to make the changes themselves, and we trust them as professionals to do the right job.
True, I guess, in the sense that IANA wouldn't spontaneously decide to do these things on their own. But my guess is that you know, the board would want to have sort of external vetting of the changes of the nature that would sort of be relevant to an ARZERC or ARZERC-like body.
Yeah.
You know, an example for outside of the naming world would be, you know, if the IETF completes the standardization of the RPKI stuff, IANA, and the numbering community wishes to use IANA as directed by the IAB a number of years back as the trust anchor for the RPKI hierarchy, deploying that would have, you know, would be a non-trivial exercise in many ways, you know, conceptually similar to deploying DNSSEC at the root. You'd probably want the same level of care and consideration that was done in the development of DNSSEC and the deployment of DNSSEC within the IANA for the RPKI hierarchical tree. You know, whether or not that actually happens is, you know, not relevant for this discussion,
no.
But conceptually that's the model. You know, whether it's ARZERC or it's something like ARZERC on up specifically for numbering related stuff under the direction of the numbering community, you know, either way, I just think that whoever makes the decision, which I gather will be ICANN's board, about the PTI implementing that functionality, I'm fairly certain, you know, if I was on the board, I'd want sort of an external vetting myself.
Of course, if we say this is the formal function of the ARZERC, we probably should rename it to something more general than the root zone, which is going to be waving a red flag at those people who have been upset on the mailing list till now. I'm not sure I want to fight that battle.
Okay, but I mean...
Yeah, I mean...
Sorry, David, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's why I said, you know, if it's not ARZERC, you know, at some future point, if and when this becomes relevant, which, you know, I'm not that it ever actually would become relevant, but, you know, if it did, then it should be possible to spin up a body that is similar to ARZERC, or the ARZERC could be rechartered to deal with things other than the names as well.
That's an issue between ICANN and PTI in the contract for what it does and how it does it.
Potentially, I mean the oddness, I guess, would be that, you know, the ARZERC is defined within the proposal and I gather within the bylaws or something like that. But and the way it was structured, at least within the proposal, was that it does sort of suggest that it was intended for names, even though reading the wording would suggest that it actually was supposed to also do stuff beyond names. Just its location within the proposal suggests it's within names. So, whether or not ICANN could spin up something, the board could ask for input from a third party. Of course, it's possible. You don't have to go through a structure like ours, or you could go to each of the impacted parties directly and say, do you recommend this? Whether or not ARZRC does it, I think, is sort of unclear in my mind, I think the functionality that the ARZRC is providing for the names would probably be applicable elsewhere.
So here's a suggestion for you both and others. I think there's a couple of points here. First of all, we need to come back to the timing for this group's feedback on the charter, which is more urgent than I had recollected, and so that's a separate point. As far as this is concerned, I don't think we can resolve. There are sufficiently strong feelings and divergent opinions around this issue of formal inclusion or not of the communities other than names. It's clear that we as the group have had the authority and have the opportunity to ensure that the oversight of the implementation is consensual. So here's what I suggest we do. We focus on making sure that the ARZRC, through the charter and through the bylaws, is fit for purpose for oversight of naming-related issues. But moreover, that it's sufficiently inclusive that should other communities voluntarily wish to participate in it, it will naturally provide them with that forum to do so. So we don't make it exclusive, but we stick within our remit. And I think in so doing, we might provide a natural but not presumptive solution. And that's what I would suggest to you we try and do. And I think we may be able to walk that line. And the first step of that is, of course, to communicate, to revise the charter and then to communicate that's the way it is to be. Now, when we were given this draft,
Jonathan, I don't think the charter needs any revision for that. Those communities are already included.
I happen to agree with you, Alan, but I happen to agree with you.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so I'm not suggesting it needs any revision. I'm just making sure that the group has had the opportunity to provide any suggested modifications. So we were asked originally to provide input, I think by around the 12th of May, and we sought to extend that to the 17th. So we are, in a sense, already on the deadline. So I think what I'd like to do is impose on this group the deadline of the 17th for comments and changes to this proposed charter. I think we've discussed it pretty thoroughly, and so the two actions are for the group to provide input to any changes in wording or substance of the charter by no later than the 17th, and second, to authorize the chairs to communicate or remind the other communities, the other operating communities, of the function and purpose of this ARZRC, the fact that they are naturally invited to participate, I think I'd just leave it at that. Any reservations or concerns with that approach? Good. Well, we'll proceed along those lines, and hopefully we can walk the line between the different concerns that have been expressed. I'm going to move us on then to item 5, which is the brief update on the project cost support team. Now, this issue, you may recall, is about the fact that the IANA stewardship group, this group, and the accountability group individually and collectively incurred through the course of their work, both through the direct needs and indirect needs for travel, staff, legal, and so on, significant costs. This was cause of consternation at various levels in the community, but ultimately at the Board Finance Committee level. And the Board Finance Committee initiated a series of initially informal and then more structured conversations with both the co-chairs of the two groups and the SO and AC leadership, for want of a better expression. And out of this was born an agreement, really, with the SOAC chairs and vice chairs, the SOAC leadership, to form this PCST, the Project Cost Support Team, whose primary job it seems to be, is to both report on and assist with the controlling of costs. We have seen, Lisa and myself as co-chairs of this group, a preliminary report from that group. It's not clear whether that's to be shared broadly or not, so we will share that as soon as possible, or the relevant draft of it. And second, we discussed this with the co-chairs of the CCWG, and we have some feedback on that. So together, we are going to provide some feedback back to the authors of the PCST document and, I guess, indirectly to the Board Finance Committee and seek to improve or develop the way in which this is working. The primary concern, and I think it's not going too far to say this, the primary concern is that this process appears to expect a degree of control over costs on the part of the co-chairs without clear mechanics and processes for doing so. So the intent is understood and fully appreciated. The mechanics of how to achieve it are less clear. And so that's really it's a sort of work in progress, but Lisa and I, in our preparation for this call, felt we should update you with that. Any comments or questions on this point? Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. When this whole idea came up, I think those of us, and I think it was largely the chairs of the ACs and SOs in conjunction with the co-chairs that were being consulted by the Board Finance Committee people who hosted a number of calls. And certainly I and a number of other people made it exceedingly clear that saying the co-chairs had to control the costs without any mechanisms to do it was something that was just not going to fly. And this is very much a culture change in ICANN and how these kind of groups are run. There was an acknowledgement from Shireen and from a number of other people, including Steve Crocker, that yes, this is a very large departure from where we are before. Co-chairs of these kind of groups or chairs normally cannot simply make ad hoc decisions and tell the working group what to do. And they acknowledged that that would have to change, but we seem to have forgotten that as we've gone along with the implementation of this team. And I think it's our responsibility to wake senior people up in ICANN, essentially the board, and point out that, fine, they've now implemented the mechanics, but how are we going to make it work? And that has not been addressed, certainly not in any venue I've been in, and I think it can't be ignored, because otherwise it puts an unfair... The co-chairs of the groups in a rather unfair position where their communities have not agreed to what they're now supposed to be doing. So I think we got to bounce it back to them.
I think that's exactly the concern. I think that will almost certainly be reflected in a letter from the co-chairs back to or in communication back from the co-chairs to the authors of this report. So, yes, Alan, I agree with you. I mean, essentially, it's this challenge between marrying a historic role as a facilitator chair to a more of a kind of management role, and the mechanics of how to do that are not yet clear. I mean, we've got some ideas, all of us, I'm sure, but yes. So I don't think we want to go into it in a lot of detail now, but your concern is my and probably our concern, and so that will need more work to do it. But that was what I wanted to give the group an update on, or Lisa and I, we wanted to give the group an update on that. So I don't think I have any closing remarks particularly. I mean, you've seen the scope of the agenda. It was very important, we felt, to link up the work of the IOTF, the client committee, and this group, and make sure that they weren't sort of diverging and there wasn't too much autonomy going on in separate groups that weren't necessarily empowered to have that. And so it feels like this has been useful from a communication point of view. So hopefully those of you that have participated have felt that, and those that listen to the audio and or transcript will feel the same. So I think with that, we can I'll just pause to see if there are any other remarks, questions, or comments. And thanks for your support on that objective and achieving that objective, Olivia. If there are any other supports, comments, or questions, I'll pause to hear those. If not, we'll be bringing the meeting to a close. Okay, great. Well, thank you, everyone. Thanks for participating. We'll be in touch about the next meeting, and please keep a close eye on the mailing list for working and developing the various documents. And remember, the tight deadline for this ASA charter, it's just a few days from now. Thanks again, and we'll be working with one another again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, everyone. Bye.